BioLink is a Canadian company that manufactures ProTalk, a screen reader for Windows that's been around a fair while now. They're also doing other things that are quite exciting and that we'll hear about in this interview. On the line now to tell us all about what BioLink is doing is Albert Millison. Albert, welcome to the program. You guys have been around for quite some time now, haven't you?
That's correct. We incorporated in 1985.
And what were you initially doing as a company? Because, of course, that predates Windows.
Well, originally we had both DOS software for DOS screen reading software for the blind, as well as various hardware products for individuals with physical disabilities.
I suppose now, though, you're concentrating more on the visual impairment market. Have you specialized in that area?
We have specialized in the visually impaired market, and more specifically towards the Windows platform, mostly for economic reasons, since that's the largest section, and software-only development is a fraction of the cost of hardware development. It just became too cost prohibitive.
How large is the company, by the way? How many staff does BioLink employ?
It varies between 2 and 6 individuals.
So you'd have, like, what, a couple of programmers and salespeople? Is that how it works?
That's typically two programmers or 2 or 3 programmers and 1 to 2 people handling the marketing and the office work.
One of the things that people sometimes forget, of course, is that BioLink was a very early adopter of Windows because I think you, after Window Bridge, you were the second screen reader to come out with any kind of Windows access. That was with Windows 3.1. You chalked up a bit of a first as well, I understand.
Oh, that's correct. We weren't the second platform or the second screen reader for Windows 3.1, but we were the first for Windows NT. Our software actually originally supported Windows NT 3.5 and 3.5.1. And actually the current version of the software still supports it out of legacy.
Why were you able to do that? What was the secret?
Well, primarily, it involved getting an inside knowledge of how Windows NT itself works. Since it was so well designed to protect against viruses, it blocked off many of the hooks that a Windows 3.1 or Windows 95 screen reader would use. So I guess it just involved getting down and dirty with the operating system.
Where is ProTalk at the moment, which is the screen reader that you market? You have a current version of that out. What operating systems will that run with?
Well, the current versions, there's 2 independent versions. One is for the Windows 95, Windows 98 platform, and the other is for Windows NT 3.5.1, 4, and Windows 2000 platforms.
Tell us a bit about the latest features in ProTalk and why you would recommend it as a screen reader that people should take a look at.
Well, I guess the primary focus of ProTalk has always been to make or to have a screen reader that was simple to use and didn't require the user writing complex scripts or learning a multitude of key commands to do just the normal work with an application. So, for example, in Microsoft Word, a typical user may go through an entire session and never actually implement or use a ProTalk hotkey. It would just simply work. They use the program, and it would speak the menus. You wouldn't need to customize any scripts or execute a hotkey to just interact with the program.
How about those situations, let's continue with Word as an example, where there might be a time where I'm writing a document and all I want to do is have the text read back. Let's say I've written an important letter and this is my first draft, but then once I've got the language right, then I want to turn on some additional formatting and find out if I've bolded what I thought I'd bolded and italicized what I thought I'd italicized. Can ProTalk give me that information?
Oh, absolutely. Although the command set was designed to be simple, it's not absent. So, for example, you could tell it to read back blocks of text, giving you all of the font information, color information, whether or not it's underlined or it's italicized. You could even instruct to read back the entire document so that if you want to proofread it, you could just tell it to read the entire document and listen to it to make sure that there aren't any typos or any other grammatical errors without needing to use the keyboard.
What about Internet Explorer access, which is a field in which there's been a heck of a lot of competition lately for the most effective access to IE? What's ProTalk like with browsing the web?
It does quite a good job of handling text-based web pages and standard hypertext links. For example, there are tools that will let you list the currently available hypertext links on a screen, and you can browse the screen in a navigation mode, so that even though there's no cursor available, you can browse the entire screen. Now, there are screens that are beyond its ability. For example, if you connect to a graphical site or a Shockwave site, then obviously there isn't much any screen reader is able to do there.
So you can cursor up and down through a web page as if it were a document in Word, for instance?
Using the navigation mode, yes, even if there is no cursor visible on the screen.
Okay. What synthesizers will ProTalk support?
It supports a wide range of hardware and software synthesizers. For software, we include we have available a text-to-speech software for the sound card. We also support Microsoft Voice, quite a variety of serial synthesizers such as the DeckTalk, the Keynote, the Accents. And we have, the entire list is actually built into the program. So when you install it, it just simply asks you for what you would like.
So are you doing your own software speech, or is it a license arrangement that you have?
It's a license arrangement. That's one thing we've learned early on when we were developing hardware. Don't invent what you can license.
Fair enough. Now, speaking of hardware, when ProTalk first came out, I remember there was a lot of talk about the fact that when you purchased it, you had a dongle that would plug into the printer port, and then if you wanted to plug in a printer, you would plug in something else into the top of that. But you've now gone to software copy protection, I understand.
That's correct. We found that with the hardware, it was a significant expense because, again, that was something we were also licensing. And it tended to cause quite a bit of hassle if you needed to use the program on more than one computer. For example, one copy at home and one copy at work. So we have instead gone to a software-only protection system that allows the user two completely legal installs. So they could install one copy on their desktop PC and one copy on their notebook without violating any copyrights.
Let's say, for instance, that I have a desktop at home and a desktop at the office and a notebook. Do you allow on certain application increased number of installs?
We do allow it, though we would prefer if the user would contact us directly for permission.
What kind of copy protection are you using? I guess that some vendors don't want to be too specific about this, but the reason why I ask the question is that on some faster machines and machines with certain types of hardware, I know that Everlock is causing no end of difficulty. Is it Everlock you're using or something different?
It's not Everlock. It's a protection system that we've developed in-house. It does not key itself directly to the hardware, so that you don't have to worry about your hard disk configurations or whether or not you're using an IDE or an SCSI hard disk, or in the case of Windows 2000, NTFS or FAT32. So it doesn't implement itself using any of those systems. And we have had no problems with hardware compatibility, and we've tested it on quite a number of configurations.
So I can safely run my Norton speed disk and know that the key will stay intact afterwards?
That's correct.
Braille display support, is that there?
It is. We also have support for quite a number of Braille displays. For example, the Alvas, the Power Brails, and quite a few of the European Braille display manufacturers.
Are you doing the Blazy models at this stage, the Braille lights?
Not at this point. We do have a software developer's kit, which makes writing a driver quite simple, both speech and Braille, so that when a need for a new Braille display arises, all we really would need to develop one in-house is a loaner unit, and we could have one developed quite quickly.
One of the things that interests me is that when you look at particularly the US-based technology lists, there's a lot of talk about 2, 3, maybe 4 screen reading products. Where's your major market? Because I'm just wondering whether you feel you've made a sufficient dent in the U.S. market at this point.
Well, ironically, our major market is in Europe.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the primary reason is that in Europe it's far more braille-oriented than in the United States, which is more heavily towards speech. And the last couple of years, at least for our software, we've been focusing on improved braille support.
When you install ProTalk as a demo, is it quite easy to uninstall afterwards if you're one of those people that wants to have a look at everything that's going? Does it make lots of system modifications and things like that that can be difficult to undo?
There are very few system modifications, and there is an uninstall program within it. So if you run the uninstall, then virtually everything from the demo is removed from your computer.
What are the limitations of the demo?
For the Windows 95 version, it will run for 1 month after installation.
Right, so that's fully functional for that month.
Correct.
How much does a product sell for?
The price for the Windows 95-98 package is $345.
That's an extremely low price for a fully-fledged screen reader.
Well, we have, over the last few years, seen an upward trend in the prices of the software. And one of the advantages of having a smaller company is we have smaller overhead. So we felt that this was simply the most ethical thing to do.
What about the NT version or the Windows 2000 version?
The version for Windows NT and 2000 is $895, and that includes the 95-98 version.
What kind of products do you have in the area of low vision access?
Our low vision product is called ProVision 32, and it is also for Windows NT 3.5.1 and Windows 2000.
What are its key features that make it unique?
Well, like the ProTalk 32 package, we targeted towards easy to use and easy to interact with the application that you're running.
Does it work with speech? Does it have speech access built in?
The speech support natively is limited. It was always designed to be directly interconnected with the ProTalk 32. So when the two are running together, you have both a full screen reader and a full screen enlarger.
And do you sell that as a package? Can you get a discount if you purchase ProTalk and ProVision at the same time?
We usually do that on a sale-by-sale basis.
Okay.
Or define the price.
Right. So how much does ProVision 32 sell for in its own right?
That's $695.
Right.
Actually, I should say that's $695, not $6.95.
Yeah, well, I should hope so.
We're not that altruistic.
You're quite right, too. You guys have started producing an MP3 player, which is something that many listeners to this program will be very interested in. Tell us a bit about that and how you got into that business, because it seems a bit of a departure from what would be considered your core business, I suppose.
Well, actually, ironically, that started out as a little bit of a hobby, where there were quite a number of MP3 players on the market. So in my own time, I just took it upon myself as a weekend and evening challenge to write an MP3 program.
Why is that? I mean, as you say, there are a lot of MP3 products on the market. So why did you decide that this was a thing that's worth persisting with?
Well, the version that's currently on the Internet that's actually available for free is a basic MP3 player that was designed with an interface to be completely compatible with virtually any screen enlarger, screen reader, or adaptive input device.
So it has standard controls, such as pull-down menus and, standard buttons, that kind of thing, which a lot of them don't because they go for a fancy skin-type interface.
Actually, we've even gone away from the pull-down menus so that every function is a dedicated push button. And we've focused on dedicated push button or standard Windows control. So, for example, if you wish to open a file, there is an open push button. And that allows you to open a new MP3. The volume setting is a standard list box, and all of the other functions for play, stop, forward, reverse, those are all again, standard push buttons with pre-assigned hotkeys.
What's the decoding engine that you use for decoding the MP3s?
For that, we've licensed X-Audio.
And you're satisfied with the quality of that?
We have no complaints.
Playlist management, is that a feature that's there yet?
The free one doesn't support playlist management. What we are in the process of developing, which is a much more complex job, is an advanced MP3 player suite. The main features behind the suite is that it was intended to be one program that could handle virtually any MP3 or music function that the average user would require. It does have an integrated playlist capability, as well as song database and song searching ability. But what sets it apart from the typical ones that you would, say, download for free is that it includes the MP3 player, a fully capable CD player, so you can put a CD-ROM in your, or an audio CD in your CD drive and use it like a stereo. It has the full playlist, a full databasing capability, and a CD-quality MP3 encoder.
So does that mean that you will be able to digitally extract, or rip as the term is, material from CD and convert it to MP3 files with the suite?
Exactly. And the software not only supports digital ripping, but it also supports it in analog, since not all CD-ROM drives support it. So that if you have, for example, your notebook, which may not have it, but say has more than enough hard disk, you simply configure the recorder to record an analog, and you would get an almost as good CD audio without requiring a compatible CD-ROM.
Of course, when we listen to this program, we're listening with streaming MP3 technology. Will you implement the feature that will allow people to listen to MP3 streams like this one from within that suite?
That's actually in the process of being implemented. So that you could, for example, using Internet Explorer or Netscape, go to your site, click on the Winamp link, and it will automatically be rerouted to to this player, and will start playing automatically. And it will be added to a radio station list.
We might have to change the name of the link to make it less player-specific.
I wouldn't object.
How much are you planning on selling it for, or is it too early to say at this stage?
Our target price is $29.95 US for sale over the Internet.
When do you expect to have that ready by?
We're targeting the early to middle part of May. So it's very soon. We're in the beta shakedown stage right now.
Do you think that there's going to be much of a market for this? I suppose that people who have an interest in this have sort of found a way of mastering existing products like, say, Real Jukebox or Winamp or whatever it might be that they've chosen to use. Will people switch, do you think?
We believe so. Primarily, if you look at, say, Real Player or Winamp or Music Match, when you use scripts for, say, JAWS or any of the other screen readers, you never get the full capability of that program out of it. There's always usually very important features, for example, playlist editing, which are very difficult or impossible to do. With this software, we're targeting or focusing to make every function fully accessible to not just screen readers, but screen enlargers, voice recognition, and adaptive keyboard input. And again, for $29.95, we're not asking an exorbitant amount of money for it.
One of the things that people complain about the most when we get support questions at ACB Radio is all the conflicts that go on your system between different media players. And I wondered whether you'd considered making everyone's life easier by implementing the Windows Media and Real codecs as well as MP3 in the one player, so that essentially you could delete every other player from your system and have this one accessible player that handled all your streaming media and other media needs.
We are definitely looking into that, though it's unlikely that we'd be able to get into the initial release. The main holdup is 50% technical, 50% licensing.
Yeah, I understand Real can be a bit difficult about bundling its codec with products that use other codecs.
We have run into that as well as, And with the Windows media, it's a nice standard, but there are certain technical issues involving bundling its codec as well.
But it's something that's going to be worked on, but probably not for this 1.0 release.
Exactly. We are looking at it now, and it would probably be a 1.1 release with the Real Audio and Windows Media support.
Anything else that you have in the works that we haven't covered?
We have actually several other products that are currently under development, but we'd like to keep a few cards up our sleeves for now. You'll hear about them quite soon.
That's Albert Millison from BioLink. The web address again, www.biolink.bc.ca.